This is John Leo. I'm the editor of Minding the Campus, the website and magazine of Manhattan Institute. And I'm here today with Professor Richard Arum, the vastly successful author of the book of the year last year, Academically Adrift, which I was unable to find a negative review of. It was universally praised and came in the top of our own little poll of the best books of the year. So, Professor Arum, how does the book look 1 year ago?
We've been very pleased with the coverage it's received and the attention it's received. I'm by training a social scientist, and this project was very much a project within the social science tradition. And so we did not expect it to receive the kind of attention and public reception that it did. We're very pleased with that.
It really did make a mark. Peter Wood called it astonishing, and Richard Vedder, writing in The Chronicle, said it was the best book in recent years on the subject of higher education. Now, one of the reasons for your success was the statistic that 36% of college students have exceedingly small or non-existent gains in critical thinking, analytic reasoning, and writing ability. Is that correct?
Right, after 4 years of attending college.
But I think another reason for its success is your moderate tone. A lot of books are out declaiming what's happening on the campuses today, but you were very calm in the way you presented your evidence. Do you think that made a difference?
Well, to be honest, I have a great love for higher education in this country. When we've been out talking about the book, people have been pushing me to say higher education is a disaster in this country. I don't believe that's the case. I believe on what is the case is, unfortunately, we have been asking higher education to focus on all sorts of other worthy goals other than undergraduate education. And so undergraduate education and the learning of undergraduate students has been left behind as we've accomplished all these other impressive outcomes.
So you would say it's a matter of focus, that we haven't focused enough on the what used to be considered the main event of college education?
You know, it's worse, John, I think, than just focus. I think it would be more accurate to say that all the organizational incentives in higher education are focused in the opposite direction of academic rigor and undergraduate student learning. Mm-hmm. And so focus implies it's just that we've taken our eye off the ball, perhaps. But again, I think it's really worse than that. We've created an incentive structure in higher education for faculty and administrators not to pay much attention to the actual learning that occurs on their campuses. And worse than that, to encourage and incentivize faculty to dumb down instruction and to pass on students, keeping students happy maybe as consumers and clients, but certainly not ensuring that they learn much while there.
You deal with that very neatly in the book, referring to George Kew's term, the disengagement compact between professor and student, where you don't bother me and I won't bother you. You don't take too much of my time and I'll give you good marks. How do you unfurl that problem?
No, I think that's right. I think it's not a case of bad actors. It's not a case of lazy faculty on campuses today. It's rather faculty have been incentivized to focus overwhelmingly on research and scholarship. They have a deep personal commitment to research and scholarship. And so it's not a problem of faculty being lazy or a problem associated with faculty tenure, say. Rather, it's a system that's been set up that has allowed large numbers of students to just pass through higher education with not much asked of them, with high grade point averages, good grades, but little learned for their time.
Well, would you say that the students going to college today are as sharp as those going 20 years ago?
Well, you know, certainly, again, it depends what the time frame is. 20 years ago, I would say students attending four-year college don't look very different from 20 years ago. From 50 years ago, they certainly do look different. If you go back to 50 years, we had a dramatic expansion in four-year higher education in the 60s and 70s, massive expansion in the sector. And so you had different types of students going to four-year colleges than ever went there before. And certainly as these institutions catered to these new types of students, perhaps compromises were made. But in the last 20 years, it's less a change in the quality of students coming in and more, I would say, a change in what we ask them once they're there. And you can see that by the rising grade point averages of these institutions. And you can see it by, again, what faculty are asked to focus their time on.
Well, if I read your book correctly, you're also saying that the best students are not doing particularly well compared with those previous years. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, compared, you know, again, it's always good compared to what? And so if you compare the best students today to the rest of the pack, they're doing fine. There are many students we found putting in long hours of studying, taking rigorous coursework, and really moving up dramatically on this assessment we gave them, the collegiate learning assessment. However, again, if you make the comparison to other time points or to other countries, for example, our evidence there, first of all, the evidentiary basis of this comparison is less strong. We don't really have great data that compares over time and across country. But the evidence we do have suggests that the best students today put in about the amount of time that an average student would have put in 50 years ago. And so if that marker of time invested on their studies is an indicator of some sort of quality measure that gets at some, it's a proxy for some more underlying issues that you'd be interested in. Again, the average amount of time a student studied in the around 1960s was 20 to 25 hours per week studying. You are very hard pressed to find a four-year college student today that reports in a survey that they are putting in 20 to 25 hours per week studying. The average today is 12 to 13 hours per week, and 36% of the students attending four-year college will say they studied alone less than 5 hours per week mm-hmm. for their classes.
We had Peter Sachs in here yesterday. He's a writer on Education Matters and author of the book Tearing Down the Gates. He did a book 10 years ago called Generation X Went to College, in which he taught for the first time at a community college in the West, unidentified, and he was just torn apart by how disengaged they were. He saw the postmodern sensibility of not caring, antipathy to authority, reason, study. Now, I know the very best students are still going well. It may be a thin crust of the student bodies, but do you think he's right about that? There's a postmodern sensibility that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with the work in particular, but I would say that the themes you've articulated do resonate with my understandings of the current generation of students who have developed these cultures in response to the organizational cultures they've encountered with. Organizational cultures in K-12 education, where authority has been undermined by granting students due process rights when they face even minor day-to-day discipline.
You did a fine book on that. Give me the title again.
Judging School Discipline.
Judging School Discipline, yes.
Right. And so when students grow up in systems where it can't be assumed that the educator has authority to regulate even the basic day-to-day activities in the school, they come into higher education with different attitudes and dispositions than the generation before. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the problem, though, is it's too easy for higher education to say, oh, it's just the students have changed. The problem is they come in with these attitudes and dispositions, and we don't challenge them in significant ways. We've pulled away from any sort of responsibility for moral development of students. We've pulled away from any sort of responsibility for social regulation of their behavior. And so rather than provide them with a counter narrative that they come into higher education with some attitudes and behaviors, but you confront them from day one and say, you think higher education is about this, but we're telling you it's something different. Your being here is a privilege. It's an opportunity. You have a responsibility to yourself as well as to the larger society to take that time and opportunity and not squander it. Throughout higher education today, you rarely see such a counter discourse from either faculty or leadership that really would help to guide and direct this generation of students that, again, we argue in the book, are largely adrift.
Right. Let me ask you one final question. Take as much time as you need. What reforms have been proposed or are on the horizon as a result of your work?
Let me start with kind of what we would recommend. And I think there's the challenge for someone like me. So we are the first to kind of lay out the problems in higher education in terms of undergraduate learning and lay out that with social science data. And so there are serious problems here that threaten the future of these students as well as the society as a whole. So we're the first to say there's a problem. However, a lot of well-intended government actors might say, okay, we've got this problem. Let's go address it with greater regulation, greater accountability schema imposed from up high. Think in K-12 education of No Child Left Behind. These are people that are attempting to respond to the real problems that have been identified, but we have argued that such an approach would be a mistake, that this kind of regulation from a central authority will be counterproductive in attempting to change the system. Rather, we have argued that what we need is greater accountability and responsibility at lower levels in the system. And so we've started by going out and talking directly to trustees and saying, we believe that trustees in the system, not the federal government, but the trustees have a responsibility to ask administrators at their campuses three questions. Three basic questions that you would ask of any leader of a school. I don't care if it's an elementary school or a high school. You ask them first, how are you measuring learning? Right? How are you measuring what's occurring on campus? Two, you ask them, where are areas that need improvement? And three, you ask them, what are you doing to improve those areas? And if the administrator can't answer those three questions, you hold them accountable.
Good point. Good point.
Then let's not let a faculty and students off the You have to build in accountability at the faculty level and, of course, at the student level. We let the students, 36% of them say we study less than 5 hours a week. Study alone less than 5 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Their grade point average is 3.2, closer to a B plus than a B. We have to hold them accountable for the work they're putting in also.
Richard, I can see we're going to have you back. You've done a good job. I've been talking with Richard Arum, sociologist at New York University and co-author of Academically Adrift, the educational book of the year.
Thank you very much,
Thank
John.
You.